You will notice that the heading is the Book of Daniel. And though it would appear that the Jews understood that the Book of Daniel was written by inspiration of God, they were very unwilling to call Daniel a prophet. However, the Lord Jesus, in Matthew 24, calls him a prophet when you see the abomination of desolation spoken of by Daniel the prophet. So if the Lord speaks in that way of him, then we may have no doubt that we are to regard him as a prophet. And indeed, towards the end of the book, we shall find some of the most far-reaching, some of the most precise, and also some of the ones that are most hard to be revealed and were sealed at the time of the prophecies of Daniel. His contemporary Ezekiel, an older contemporary, under the inspiration of the Spirit of God, clearly himself thought highly of him and wrote highly of him. For in chapter 14 of his prophecies, he says, even though Noah and Daniel and Job were there, I would not forgive the people by their intercession. They should only be forgiven for their own sins. And that is remarkable, for Noah was not a writing prophet, and Job was not a writing prophet. Well, yes, maybe it would be fair to say that he did write the book that bears his name, but both of them were long before this time. And to couple a contemporary, a man who was still living with such, before his own life was completed and his work done to be assessed, to group him in that way, clearly because God so ordered that he should, speaks to us and reminds us of how seriously we are to take Daniel. Now, our story begins, I suppose, in 2 Kings 20. And I think that would be the best place for us to start. Well, let's read from 2 Kings 20 and verse 14. It's a very familiar piece of history. The extra years given to Hezekiah. Do you remember? He was granted 15 more years. But during that 15 years, then came Isaiah the prophet unto King Hezekiah, and said unto him, what said these men? And from whence came they unto thee? And Hezekiah said, they are come from a far country, even from Babylon. Babylon, notice. And he said, what have they seen in thine house? And Hezekiah answered, all the things that are in mine house have they seen. There is nothing among my treasures that I have not showed them. And Isaiah said unto Hezekiah, hear the word of the Lord. Behold, the days come that all that is in thine house, and that which thy fathers have laid up in store unto this day, shall be carried into Babylon. Nothing shall be left, saith the Lord. And this is the key verse. And of thy sons that shall issue from thee, which thou shalt beget, shall they take away, and they shall be eunuchs in the palace of the king of Babylon. With that rather strange comment of Hezekiah, then said Hezekiah unto Isaiah, good is the word of the Lord which thou hast spoken. And he says, is it not good if peace and truth be in my days? Now, Daniel would be one of the blood royal, one of the seed royal, about 100 years later. It is generally accepted that the captivity began in the year 606 BC. And it is also true that Hezekiah died in 691 BC. if you allow that this happened sometime in the 15 years before that, during those extra years that he was given before he died, then clearly this prophecy is about 100 years old at the time when Daniel comes to find himself to be one of those who is taken away to Babylon. We know from various monuments and literature of the Babylonians that the schooling that was given to those who were being educated to govern the lands of Babylon and all the outlying lands, the satraps and those who had responsibility perhaps for 100 square miles or whatever it was, that they received 3 years training. This is commented on apart from what we get in the Bible here. And that usually that was given to those who were between the ages of 13 and 16 in their 14th, 15th and 16th years. So between the age of 13 up to 16, it was usual for them to receive that training. And while there may have been exceptions within months or so at either end, I dare say, it would seem that this is the most likely age that we are to think of for the arrival of these boys in that land. Again, the expression prince of the eunuchs, it doesn't, might not mean exactly what it appears to mean. We have with Potiphar, for example, in the life of Joseph, that he was the chief steward, but the actual words mean the chief executioner. But he wasn't just the chief executioner. We don't have an example of him executing anybody. He did keep the prison. He was obviously in charge of the police of the court and so on. But these titles don't always convey what we might think they should convey. And my thought is that now, I used to think that it seemed more likely that they would be eunuchs, because they often had eunuchs at these courts to deal with the women, and so that they would not oppress the women and so on. But it seems unlikely that this was the case here, and that probably what is meant by eunuchs to some degree, I mean, they would have been eunuchs, but they wouldn't have been doing this particular course. And he was in charge of them, it is immature people, boys, you see, and so on. And it might convey an even wider particular position. So it would seem that that expression covers boys, and that we might think of Daniel as being probably about 13-year-old when he's taken. It makes sense. The captivity was 70 years, and he lived some years after the captivity in a position of great honour. So 70 years on top of 13 would make him 83, and then some other years afterwards. And there clearly men can be, like Gladstone and like people in the scriptures, competent at that age. It would seem a very likely age that as we first meet Daniel, he's about 13. If we now turn to 2 Kings and on a little bit to 2 Kings 23 and verse 29, we see the end of King Josiah. Now, the successor to King Josiah reigned for 3 months. And it was in the third year of his successor that Daniel was taken captive. So he would have been about 9, old enough to remember very well, especially if he was of the seed royal, the circumstances of the death of Josiah. Although Josiah's successors, both of them, were very poor kings, Josiah, of course, was not a bad, he was a good king. As was Hezekiah, in though they had their failings. You remember what constitutes good or bad among the kings was the loyalty to the faith and the keeping themselves free from idols and the guiding of the nation in the worship. But if we just read in 2 Kings 23 and for verse 29, these are things that I think Daniel would almost certainly have remembered. In his days, that's referring to Josiah, not Daniel, in his days, Pharaoh Necho, king of Egypt, went up against the king of Assyria to the river Euphrates. And King Josiah went against him, and he slew him at Megiddo when he had seen him. And his servants carried him in a chariot dead from Megiddo, and brought him to Jerusalem, and buried him in his own sepulchre. And the people of the land took Jehoahaz the son of Josiah, and anointed him, and made him king in his father's stead. And you read a little bit more about that. Now, we read in chapter 24, in his days, Jehoiakim, Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, came up, and Jehoiakim became his servant 3 years. Then he turned and rebelled against him. And the Lord sent against him bands of the Chaldees, bands of the Syrians, bands of the Moabites, bands of the children of Ammon, and sent them against Judah to destroy it, according to the word of the Lord, which he spake by his servants the prophets. This is exactly what is described in the first couple of verses of Daniel. And then this comment, which is what I wanted you to see. Surely at the commandment of the Lord came this upon Judah, to remove them out of his sight, for the sins of Manasseh, according to all that he did, and also for all the innocent, for the innocent blood that he shed, for he filled Jerusalem with innocent blood, which the Lord would not pardon. We are not allowed to know, but it would have been nice to know, just where Daniel fitted into the royal family. Now, I expect he was what we would call today a minor royal. That is to say, possibly one of the sons or one of the daughters of Hezekiah, but not the one who took to the throne, married and had children, and then they had children, but were still another degree or two removed from the throne, but nevertheless were known in Judah as part of the seed royal. He might have been more direct than that. He might have been the son of Josiah, for all we know. We don't know. But we do know that he was one of those who are described here as certain of the children of Israel and of the king's seed and of the princes. Think now of a group of children of that age being escorted away from Jerusalem by the command of Nebuchadnezzar. We saw in the last century the rounding up of Jews, and not telling them where they were going, even lying to them what their destination was before they went to the gas chamber. It must have been hard for these youngsters to have been separated and herded together and forced probably to walk alongside the carriages or whatever, but to go as captives without their parents, maybe not knowing what had happened to their parents, but to go all that way, not knowing what the intention was. Why was it that they'd been specially set apart? Were they to be hostages? Were they to be treated cruelly in prison? Were they to be put to death? Were they to be maimed? We don't know. But what does come across very clearly is, at least with Daniel and his three friends, as we call them, there was a determination to make themselves clear of that condemnation which God had upon Jerusalem for the sin of its former kings. Maybe it just lay in Daniel and he spread it to the other three of his friends who agreed with him. But somehow, somewhere, the Lord had put it into the heart of Daniel that he was to be different from those rulers. That he was to be as a Josiah, he was to be as a Hezekiah, he was to be as a Solomon, he was to be as a David in terms of his loyalty to the Lord and to his word. Thus early, if it pleases the Lord, can the cause of God and truth, the desire to do right, be put deep into the hearts of his people. Daniel would have written this book, I think myself, but you don't have to believe that he wrote it in order to write down the prophecies which come at the end and then had the need of prefacing it. But it doesn't matter how the Holy Spirit caused him to come to write it. But he wrote it in his relative old age, because clearly the events that are here must have happened. And it's interesting from that perspective how he opens the book. His name, the name of Daniel, does not appear until verse 6. And the first concern that he has in this book is nothing to do with himself or his friends or the others who were taken to captivity with him, but the captivity of the vessels from the house of God. All those years after, maybe not just the priority of his mind all these years after, but maybe he's recording what he actually felt so strongly. Maybe as they were herded together and taken, it was within sight of the vessels of the Lord jangling on some cart. We don't know. But you will see that the first two verses are taken up with the desecration of the vessels of the temple. Only some of them. The rest followed 11 years later when the final destruction of Jerusalem took place in 586. So Daniel was not there when the man's eyes were put out and his sons were slain before him and his eyes were put out. He may have known the king, Jehoiakim, in those days. We don't know. Nothing is said about it. But at this stage, his first interest is in the vessels. And we may learn, I think, from that if the Holy Spirit gives us a concern greater for the glory of his name and for the work of his church, a greater feeling for those things and sense of honour for those things than for ourselves or for our families, that would be a wonderful thing. And so we read at the beginning of the book, in the third year of the reign of Jehoiakim, king of Judah, came Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, unto Jerusalem and besieged it. And the Lord gave Jehoiakim, king of Judah, into his hand with part of the vessels of the house of God, which he carried into the land of Shinar, to the house of his God. Takes us back to Genesis 11, takes us back to Babylon, takes us back to the building that was reared, the great ziggurat. And it is said that this particular building of Nebuchadnezzar in Babylon was still a wonderful eight-storied ziggurat, largely made of gold, and the temple was at the summit, right up the top where the stars could be discovered, because as you know, the Babylonians with the Magi who came from there, they were great mathematicians and so on. So these things were taken into the temple of this false god, of this false system of Babylon, of those whose hearts were set over and against God. And that's the setting whether we are meant to understand that that in itself was a crucial thing in moulding these boys' thoughts towards being loyal to their God, I don't know. I think we do right to think that this was a spiritual thing, but you know as well as I do that boys can be fiercely loyal. And boys and girls also, of course, if they're told to do a thing, can do exactly the opposite and be determined to do so. But there seems nothing of rebellion in this. It seems to be all of the Spirit of God, all of his great work. And so, verse 3, the king spake unto Ashpenaz, the master of his eunuchs, that he should bring certain of the children of Israel, and of the king's seeds, and of the princes, children in whom was no blemish, but well favoured. I think the main reason that makes me think that these were not eunuchs was this whole business about them having no blemish. It would seem pointless to want people of no blemish and then for this particular thing to be done to them. So the king commanded Ashpenaz to go among the children of Israel, but not all, just the king's seed and the princes, and to find out among them those who had no blemish but were well favoured and so on. In other words, excellence was being looked at here. Those who came short in any way, and we know from the history of the kings that not all of them were capable of rule, that not all of them were able to do it, and just because you descend from a king, you don't necessarily have all the abilities to rule. And so Nebuchadnezzar, now this came from the very top of the greatest king of the time, who compared with other kingdoms is called the Golden Head. God really is saying that this was the greatest kingdom that ever was. He himself, under God of course, but he selected and asked Ashpenaz to see to it that the children of Israel, of the king's seed and of the princes, children in whom was no blemish, should be brought to be trained. Now, we don't know, and I don't know, but I'll tell you what I think. The training, as we know, of the men for governing his kingdom was an ongoing process. And I imagine that all that was being said here was that this year's intake, so to speak, was to be added to by these noble Israelites. In other words, that they wouldn't be the only ones there. They weren't the only ones who were being trained, either then or at other times. But that they were added to the current year's training. I can't be sure, but because we know that this is what they did, that they did train people to be the leaders, the king, had this great idea in his mind. A, that he would train the best of these men, perhaps with the idea that they would one day go back and rule, because he'd looked after them with favour towards him, but rule the land they knew. Or else, it may be, that by teaching them all these things and exposing them to the best things in his land, that hopefully they would forget all about their God and their land. That may also have been in his view. I think I told you that I remember my headmaster when I was going into the ministry, and he introduced Greek into the school the year I first went there, and I did it. But he said, he confessed openly, that he'd done it in order to make humanists of us. Know thou thyself, presume not God to scan, the proper study of mankind is man. That's Greek. And he desired that is what would happen. And he actually saw the funny side of me being converted in the middle, having Greek to my hand, in order to read the New Testament in the original, and then being called into the ministry. And something like that is happening here. Happened with Moses, didn't it? who was brought up in all the learning of the Egyptians, and went to join his brethren. So it doesn't follow that this idea of contamination by bringing into contact with others will drag you down. I think it normally does, but where God has his chosen leader in mind, and where he wants such a person to have a wider breadth of knowledge than merely his own local land, then he exposes him to these things which may be difficult. Joseph was 20 years away from his father. Moses was many years, both being trained in Egypt and then afterwards in the desert. And Daniel was away from home, never to go back again, for many years. But by this training, the Lord prepared strong men to do his work. So the Lord does still give. It is true that not many mighty, not many mobile are called, but at the same time, he does sometimes use those who are absolutely fitted physically and mentally and spiritually for a particular task. Now, Nebuchadnezzar defined that as being skillful in all wisdom, cunning. He doesn't mean cunning in our sense, but somebody with the real parts of understanding. Understanding science, and such as had ability in them to stand in the king's palace. So he was looking for ability. He was looking for people who were able to learn. They were going to have to learn the Chaldean language in 3 years. They were going to have to learn the culture. They were going to have to learn its mathematics, its physics, its sciences, its books. They were going to have to learn the art of government all in 3 years. And to cap it all, not just a GCSE or an A-level, but a personal interview with Nebuchadnezzar, of all people. I don't think anybody would have looked forward to being ill-prepared in an interview with Nebuchadnezzar. So this was what was being looked for. But on the other hand, the king extended kindness to them and appointed them a daily provision of the king's meat and of the wine which he drank, so nourishing them 3 years that at the end thereof they might stand before the king. And among these were the children of Judah, Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah. And the prince of the eunuch almost said, well, we know that it was Nebuchadnezzar who appointed their names, because it says so later on. But the prince of the eunuchs, on behalf of Nebuchadnezzar, gave them new names. And the key factor in this is that the names of Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah all have the name of God in them. El is the word for God, and AH, of course, is the Yah of Jehovah. So they either have the El, like Michael, or Daniel, or Mishael, and Joel, and all these names with the El in, or they have the AH. They all have God. And in every case, that aspect of the name was substituted by a Babylonian god. So the name that they were given was Belteshazzar, well, the god Bel, giving the name of Babylon, Bel. And the name Nebuchadnezzar can also be spelled Nego or Nebuchadrezzar. So in Abednego, you've got the name of that god. And then you've got the name in Meshach and Shadrach, the name Rach, which was also one of their gods. So the whole idea in the renaming was to get them familiarized with the new name. Now, you can see it could work either way. With certain children, it might be that to be called by these new names, they would think, oh, it's a compliment, we belong, you know. Others would find it a great insult that these names were used instead of their old proper names. But we don't know how these reacted. Certainly there is no suggestion that in anything they rebelled. In the thing that Daniel purposed in his heart to do, the language that he uses years afterwards indicates that he simply requested. He didn't rebel. He persuaded. He looked for the Lord to act on his behalf to make the thing happen. Now, I think probably that's a good place to stop, because although I was going to go on, I think that if I once move into the next bit, it'll take me some moments. So we'll pick up from verse 8 next time. But I hope that you will enjoy the study of Daniel, which will engage our attention, God willing, for a few weeks more.